The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Judge Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation clash.
President Trump let loose with a series of tweets attacking the process.
Plus, what's at stake for North Korea talks as the president visits the UN?
Well, I think what the president is hoping to do is get the process back on track.
And the man behind the push to sell 3D printed guns is charged with sexual assault.
According to the arrest affidavit, Cody Wilson paid a girl under the age of 17 to have sex with him.
And now, from the Capital One Bank studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. President Trump told Fox News Thursday he wants the confirmation process to continue while letting the sexual assault allegation against him play out. He took to Twitter Friday morning to again defend Kavanaugh. It comes amid continued negotiations over his accuser's testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
As negotiations ramp up over whether Dr. Christine Blasey Ford will appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee, President Trump let loose with a series of tweets attacking the process. The president zeroing in on the accuser by name, saying, "If the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been filed with local authorities by either her or her, quote, loving parents," adding, "Why didn't someone call the FBI 36 years ago? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell reassured Republicans that Brett Kavanaugh will be confirmed.
Judge Kavanaugh will be on the United States Supreme Court.
Lawyers for Blasey said she cannot testify on Monday, but later in the week might work if the committee meets certain requests, including having her testify after Kavanaugh and having both be questioned by senators and not outside counsel. She also wants the committee to subpoena Mark Judge, the student Blasey says was also in the room at the time of the alleged assault.
Usually the accuser goes first because they have to lay out the claim that you can then respond to.
Kavanaugh's alma mater, Georgetown Prep, is taking steps to change the school's image. The school president issued a letter to parents saying it's time to talk bluntly about what respect for others, especially women, means in actions and in words. It's tough to see the caricature by some that we are elitist, privileged, uncaring. Mola Lenghi, CBS News, the White House.
Michael Cohen, President Trump's former attorney, says he's now providing what he calls critical information to special counsel Robert Mueller as he investigates Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Cohen pleaded guilty to campaign finance and other charges last month. Meanwhile, President Trump is again attacking his attorney general.
I'm disappointed in the attorney general for numerous reasons.
Trump has repeatedly criticized Sessions for recusing himself in the Russia investigation. In an interview with The Hill Tuesday, he escalated his attacks, saying, "I don't have an attorney general. It's very sad." And said he was unhappy with Sessions' work at the border. Sessions has typically stayed quiet in the wake of such attacks. In August, he issued a rare statement noting his unprecedented success at effectuating the president's agenda. At the border, Sessions has diligently worked to deliver on the president's campaign promises, expediting deportations, limiting asylum seekers, and opposing sanctuary cities. In his interview with two conservative commentators from The Hill, the president also took aim at another frequent target, federal law enforcement. He described the FBI's Russia investigation as a cancer and suggested that declassifying documents related to the investigation will be one of his crowning achievements. Sessions spoke to a group of law enforcement officials in Waukegan, Illinois.
"We believe that law enforcement is a noble profession and one that demands respect."
Sessions did not respond to the president's attacks. We were given an advance copy of his remarks and noticed when he delivered his speech, he took out a reference to President Trump improving morale among law enforcement. Paula Reed, CBS News, the White House.
A New York Times report says Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein suggested last year he secretly recorded the president and discussed a way to remove him from office for being unfit. In a statement Friday, Rosenstein denied the report. After spending this weekend at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, President Trump heads to the UN General Assembly in New York. White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy will be there. Stephen, what do we expect from the president?
A busy week of diplomacy, and what a difference a year makes. It was at the UN last September, from the General Assembly, that the president in his first speech to that group said that Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and his regime. He said the U.S. could totally destroy North Korea. But this September, after the Singapore summit, after the repeated exchanges between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, he says that Kim is calm, he is calm, it's all very calm, so we'll see what happens, in the words of the president. The president's in receipt of a letter recently from Kim Jong-un, and last week the North promised to dismantle a key nuclear test site, so there is optimism. The president will be meeting in New York with the president of South Korea, Moon Jae-in.
How much does the Trump administration want to show that it's trying to engage North Korea, especially at the UN?
Well, I think what the president is hoping to do is get the process back on track, kind of sort of recapture some of the momentum that we saw this summer going into the Singapore summit and coming out of it immediately. Things seem to have stalled, though, and you remember the president canceled Secretary of State Pompeo's fourth trip to Pyongyang, complaining publicly about a lack of progress. But then, as I mentioned, you recently have the receipt of this letter and the promise to dismantle and all of these things the White House is saying are evidence that the North is once again serious about moving toward denuclearization. This week, there will be a Security Council meeting that will take place on Thursday that will be focused on the North, and Secretary Pompeo will actually chair that meeting. We'll have to see what comes out of it in terms of any kind of maybe concrete promises that the North might make this week.
Do we expect any of the president's orbit to clash with Iran at the UN?
Well, that'll be Wednesday's focus, as the president himself chairs a meeting of the UN Security Council that's focused on nuclear proliferation. The president tweeted Friday that it's really about Iran. What'll be interesting is the extent to which the international community, and particularly the members of the Security Council, respond to the president on this issue. He doesn't really have any allies on the Security Council who agree with him that it was a good idea to pull out of the Iran deal.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy on the Weekend Roundup. Authorities in Taiwan have arrested Cody Wilson. He's the 3D gun maker who sued the U.S. to post his gun blueprints online. Police say Wilson fled to Taiwan after being tipped off that he was being charged in Texas with sexual assault.
The man at the center of the debate over 3D printed guns has been charged with sexually assaulting a child. According to the arrest affidavit, Cody Wilson paid a girl under the age of 17 to have sex with him. The pair allegedly met through the website SugarDaddyMeet.com and arranged a meeting at a hotel in Austin. The girl told police that they had sex and that Wilson paid her $500 in cash. The two were reportedly seen together on surveillance video. Wilson is the owner of the company that sells blueprints for untraceable 3D printed guns online. The government ordered him to take the blueprints down, but he sued. A judge ordered him to stop selling the plans, but he's since found a loophole. Convicted of sexual assault, Wilson could face up to 20 years in prison.
Correspondent Rena Ninen reporting. Coming up, goodbye to a longtime CBS newsman.
I'm Dave Barrett.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Three newborn babies and two adults were found stabbed inside a New York City home early Friday. The youngest victim was just 3 days old. NYPD Assistant Chief Juanita Holmes says the suspect was also hurt.
The suspect, a 52-year-old female, had a slash wound to her left wrist. Two knives were recovered at the scene. All of the injured were removed to area hospitals.
All are listed in critical but stable condition. Police are trying to figure out why they say a woman opened fire at a warehouse in Aberdeen, Maryland Thursday.
First responders arrived on the scene just after 9 a.m., about 5 minutes after the shooting began.
Yeah, two DSWs, one to the chest, one to the abdomen, one to the back at location.
Terrified employees poured out of the Rite Aid distribution center as police and medical first responders arrived, finding a horrific scene. Seven people had been shot. Three of the victims died. Three others were seriously injured. The seventh was the shooter, identified by police as Snochia Mosley, a temporary employee of the facility. Harford County Sheriff Jeff Gaylor.
Our suspect is a lone female suspect, age 26, who had a last known address in Baltimore County. She has died at the hospital from a fatal injury, self-inflicted gunshot wound.
She used a 9mm Glock handgun. Her motive has not been identified. Crystal Watson's husband called from inside the building after witnessing the shooting.
She didn't even aim, she just shot. It's so upsetting, so emotional for me right now. I just want to get to my husband.
One woman in the building sent this text to her children. I love you, be good, and take care of Daddy and the pets if something should happen.
Law enforcement officials say the big question now is why Ms. Mosley began shooting. At this point, they say they have no motive for a senseless crime. Chip Reed, CBS News, Aberdeen, Maryland.
Police here in Washington say they've arrested the man who stabbed to death a woman jogging through a popular quiet neighborhood Tuesday evening, just a mile from the White House. Police Chief Peter Newsham.
We arrested and charged 23-year-old Anthony Crawford of Northwest D.C. with first-degree murder while armed.
Police say they don't have a motive. The victim, 35-year-old Wendy Martinez, collapsed inside a takeout restaurant seeking help after she was attacked. We said goodbye to a member of our own family, longtime CBS News radio correspondent Dave Barrett. He died after a brief illness.
I'm Dave Barrett on the observation deck.
Barrett was a keen observer of our world. With a wide-eyed glee, he loved to take it all in.
There they go, off into the distance, just a dot as they head down in free fall.
The feeling you get while you're skydiving, the feeling of flying.
He liked to be along for the ride. He loved the space program, sports, and music.
Early on, Dave Brubeck combined his love for jazz.
We turned to Dave when we needed that special touch.
Nearly 4.5 hours are spent watching TV.
Woo! Hooray!
How about music? Kids listen to that for about 2.5 hours a day. They sure are. 2/3 have their own cell phones.
That's part of a story that landed Dave one of several Murrow Awards. His newscasts were fast-paced.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Dave Barrett.
On air and off air, Dave Barrett was quite the storyteller. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Dave was 63. One of the two people who kidnapped Elizabeth Smart and held her captive has been released from prison.
Wanda Barzi was released from a Utah prison Wednesday morning after a mistake was discovered in calculating her sentence for the kidnapping of Elizabeth Smart.
Ms. Barzi will be thoroughly supervised. She will comply with all conditions of her release.
Barzi must register as a sex offender and not come in contact with Smart or her family. Barzi's lawyer says she will be under federal supervision for 5 years. Smart has been vocal about Barzi's abrupt release.
I don't think you can just kidnap a 14-year-old girl and not only sit by her while she's being raped, but encourage the rapist to continue. Then just at the end of it, say, I'm sorry and really mean it.
Barzi's lawyer says his client is eager to begin a new life and follow the law.
There is no reliable evidence to support speculation that Ms. Barzi presently poses a threat of any kind to the community.
Barzi served 15 years in Utah State Prison. Chris Martinez, CBS News.
Police say Border Patrol Supervisor Juan David Ortiz murdered 4 women.
Ortiz is in jail after detectives say he went on a nearly 2-week killing spree. His victims, women, some of them believed to be prostitutes, and they all happened while he was working a day shift as a Border Patrol agent. But his apparent double life caught up with him when one of his victims managed to escape. Now, according to an affidavit that was given to the Associated Press, Ortiz killed 2 women in the days before picking up Erica Pena on Friday. She escaped to a gas station where she flagged down a state trooper for help. Ortiz then allegedly picked up and killed 2 more women before authorities found him and arrested him in a hotel parking lot. In a statement, Customs and Border Patrol said, "Our sincerest condolences go out to the victim's family and friends. Criminal action by our employees is not and will not be tolerated." Ortiz worked for the Border Patrol for 10 years. At this point, we do not have a motive, and investigators believe he acted alone. He's in jail on a $2.5 million bond. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Laredo, Texas.
Ticketmaster says it's taking steps to do more to prevent scalpers from taking advantage of its resale system in response to a scathing report from Canada's CBC Network and the Toronto Star.
Wearing hidden cameras, journalists from the Toronto Star and CBC posed as scalpers at a major live entertainment conference in Las Vegas in July. That's where they found Ticketmaster representatives appearing to pitch a company-owned resale platform used by ticket scalpers.
They've become pretty good partners for me.
They have this secret scalper program that they don't talk about in any corporate reports.
CBC investigative reporter Dave Seglins is one of the reporters who went undercover, posing as a ticket broker from Toronto.
What we discovered is they are selling something called Trade Desk, which is an online system. It's purposely designed for professional scalpers.
Here's how it works. Scalpers set up fake accounts to buy tickets in bulk on Ticketmaster.com, since the website limits how many tickets one person can buy. The scalpers then sell those tickets at inflated prices on Trade Desk.
I want to know the straight goods on whether Ticketmaster is going to be policing us using our multiple accounts.
No.
Ticketmaster can then make money off fees from the initial ticket sale and the resold scalp ticket. For example, CBC analyzed ticket sales for a Bruno Mars concert and calculated that Ticketmaster could make up to $658,000 in fees, half of that coming from scalp tickets.
I'm hoping from an investigation like this, we're really bringing transparency so that people can look at this and ask whether this is right, moral, ethical, legal.
Vladimir Dutip, CBS News, New York.
Paul Simon saying farewell this week and concluding his final tour in Queens. The 76-year-old folk singer says his retirement is a bit unsettling, but a relief. Up next, we take you to Singapore.
It's usually kind of a sleepy place, and that certainly hasn't been the case this year.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Shark Tank star Mark Cuban is under fire for ignoring sexual harassment at the NBA team he owns, the Dallas Mavericks.
I would rather work 80 hours a week to make $50,000 and work for myself than have a $7,500,000 job working for somebody else.
Mark Cuban's public image is of a brash and controlling NBA owner. While he was hands-on with his basketball team, investigators say Cuban was oblivious to problems festering elsewhere in the organization.
This is a story about the countless women in the organization who had their ability to work for the Mavericks or to work in sports deeply impaired by what happened here.
A 43-page report said Terdima Usery, the former Dallas Mavericks president and CEO for 18 years, forcibly touched and kissed 15 female employees. Cuban says he was unaware of the allegations until they appeared in Sports Illustrated last February. Cuban did know that ticket sales employee Chris Hyde viewed pornography on his computer and left a used condom in the office. Cuban also knew a reporter on the team's website, Earl Sneed, had a history of battering women. Investigators said Cuban failed to fire both men immediately.
Employees just did not believe that acts of misconduct would be taken seriously or that people would be held accountable.
Usery and Sneed have previously denied the allegations against them, but Sneed did plead guilty to assaulting a domestic partner, he says, to defuse the situation. On Wednesday, Cuban apologized to the victims.
The pain that people went through, the pain that people shared with me as this happened, the tears that I saw, it hurt.
Correspondent Jerika Duncan reporting. One of the original hosts of CBS's The Talk, Julie Chen, is stepping down from her role on the TV show after her husband, former CBS head Les Moonves, was fired following sexual misconduct accusations.
I have been at The Talk since the day it started 9 years ago.
Julie Chen announced her departure in a pre-taped message to viewers and her co-hosts during her first appearance of the season.
Right now, I need to spend more time at home with my husband and our young son. So I've decided to leave The Talk.
Chen has not appeared on the daytime talk show since her husband, former CBS head Leslie Moonves, resigned amid sexual harassment and misconduct accusations.
Moonves has denied the allegations against him, which first appeared on the pages of The New Yorker in July. Chen publicly supported her husband then, issuing a statement on Twitter calling Moonves a kind, decent, and moral human being.
I will stand by that statement today, tomorrow, forever.
Earlier this month, The New Yorker reported a second round of allegations, together detailing the stories of 12 women accusing Moonves of sexual harassment or assault between the 1980s and early 2000s. Chen made headlines when she doubled down in her support, signing off Big Brother with his name.
I'm Julie Chen Moonves. Good night.
In her recorded message Tuesday, Chen did not address the scandal surrounding Moonves, but seemed emotional as she said goodbye.
I send you my love. I will miss you all very, very much.
Kenneth Craig, CBS News.
Justice for Elton John.
Elton John and his husband David Furnish have received an apology and significant financial damages over a report in the Sun newspaper their dog inflicted Freddy Krueger-like injuries on a five-year-old girl during a playdate at their home. The Sun claimed the girl was mauled and the singer and his partner failed to show interest in the child's condition. The allegation was found to be false and seriously defamatory. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
It's been a big year for Singapore on the world stage. The hot streak for the country started back in June when it hosted President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
This is a country of profound grace and beauty, and we send our warmest wishes to every citizen of Singapore.
Then came the wildly popular movie Crazy Rich Asians, set in Singapore.
Come to Singapore. I want the whole island to meet the brilliant Rachel Chu.
And this month, Singapore hosted the Formula One Grand Prix with 250,000 fans.
It's lights out and away we go. Monica
Miller is a BBC correspondent based in Singapore. Monica, what's it been like living in Singapore through all this?
You know, it's been a very exciting year. It's just, as you just mentioned, all those events, it's been nonstop. And it's usually kind of a sleepy place, and that certainly hasn't been the case this year.
How much of this attention has affected Singapore? You said it was sleepy. Have you been noticing, or has the government been telling you about more people visiting or doing business there?
Well, it's been trying to position itself as a hub, certainly for tourism, but very much for business. It is a place that has ranked one of the best airports in the world. So there's a good chance that you're going to have a layover here. And they've been trying to entice people to actually get off the plane and see the country. It's very small, so you can actually do quite a bit of sightseeing in a very short period of time. But certainly the summit drew a lot of attention, and it was kind of the positive publicity that the country was looking for. So it certainly has been, I think, now on people's minds when it comes to, do I want to have a business conference there? Do I even want to spend a few hours for a layover on my way to Australia or, you know, even to some other destinations like Bali and Indonesia or in Thailand?
How much is the country trying to, or does it even care, to shake this international reputation from years ago about it being a militant state when it comes to silly things like chewing gum or not following public rules or even trying to smuggle in drugs?
Well, those are still valid criticisms today. And certainly the chewing gum one gets everyone's attention. But it is a country that is still highly criticized for it suppresses freedom of speech. The act of homosexuality is still illegal here. And the founder of this country, who passed away not that long ago, Lee Kuan Yew, used to argue that basically this is a nice house in a bad neighborhood, and that if they open themselves up to those kind of things, there may be repercussions. There's a younger generation here that says, you know what, that argument isn't holding up anymore. So there has been a resistance to push back. But one reason that the summit was picked for here, you know, to hold a huge protests. Like, think about Washington, D.C. or L.A. or any big city in the U.S. where they would have held a summit like this between the North Koreans and the U.S. It takes a lot to protest. You're not going to get a permit very easily. So it's a very easy place to be contained politically. That was a huge asset. And that's what they are selling this as a very safe, regulated place that if you want to do business, there's not going to be too much interference in what you want to do.
BBC correspondent Monica Miller on how Singapore's pitching itself in 2018 on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Monica.
Hey, nice talking to you.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, a warning in Australia about strawberries.
There are now over 100 cases where there is a report of fruit being contaminated.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines. CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
North Carolina continues to clean up from Florence, the president visited Wednesday.
We've had a lot of help from Congress, in all fairness, and we're ready and they're ready to do whatever we have to do to make this perfect. And that means, unfortunately, the money will be a lot, but it's going to come as fast as you need it.
Meanwhile, South Carolina continues to brace for more flooding.
Get out. That's what hundreds of people living near the rain-swollen Lynch's River in eastern South Carolina have been told. High school students, including Bailey Payne and Ward Wilson, have been helping fill sandbags.
There's some pretty bad flooding in some areas, but I'm hoping that most homes will be safe in town.
We're really looking forward to being able to help them and be prepared as much as possible.
Many rivers in the Carolinas overflowing from Hurricane Florence's rains will reach record levels this week. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Officials in Australia are warning folks before eating strawberries. Network 10 correspondent Daniel Sutton explains why.
The berries on the Trung family's farm are sweet, but the markets don't want them.
It's looking like we would have to throw away, I guess, all these strawberries that are in the garden at the moment.
Like all of that fruit destined to wither in the fields, Australia's sabotage scandal is increasingly rotten.
There are now over 100 cases where there is a report of fruit being contaminated.
But
we do believe that a large number of these are fake.
Needles, pins, nails hidden in one of the country's favourite snacks. A furious Prime Minister lashed out at those responsible.
It's not a joke. It's not funny. You're putting the livelihoods of hard-working Australians at risk. And you're scaring children. And you're a coward and you're a grub.
Within days, penalties will be increased from 10 to 15 years for food tamperers who intend to hurt someone. And there'll be a new offence with 10 years jail for reckless acts where intent can't be proven.
This sends a massive deterrence message to anyone out there who would further cripple this industry.
In Queensland, where the sabotage began, 60 detectives are on the case.
They are now working on a number of active leads in relation to this matter.
Already in New South Wales,
we've found a young person has admitted to a prank, including putting needles in strawberries.
The 12-year-old girl took the fruit to school and police were called in. She's been given a caution. But experts warn the ease with which the berry industry has been brought to its knees reveals a worrying risk, agro-terrorism. With bollards and reinforced airports, terrorists may have a new way to cause fear and economic harm.
They will always go for the point of least resistance. There are vulnerabilities within the agricultural and food sector in Australia. They should be taken seriously.
Of course, growers are now urging us to buy them up and cut them up. As to availability, well, a lot of small shops never stopped selling strawberries. The supermarkets, which did, tell us they're now back on the shelves. The Prime Minister wants signs up everywhere, warning people they can go to jail if they tamper with them.
In the meantime,
make a pav this weekend and put some strawberries on it.
The Trung family and many others will thank you.
Network 10 correspondent Daniel Sutton. New research suggests wasps don't deserve their bad rap.
Just the sight of them is enough to spoil your lunch. Wasps are often considered sting-happy nuisances.
Can be dangerous with, you know, stings, especially when you've got young children, which I have.
A new study says wasps are among the least liked insects worldwide, but bees are highly appreciated. People surveyed associated bees with honey and pollination, but thought of wasps as painful and annoying.
Bumblebees are better because they're cute, because they look nice.
While both insects pollinate flowers and crops, wasps act as predators to help control populations of crop pests and disease-carrying insects.
Although you might think that all they're after is your beer or your jam sandwich, they're actually much more interested in finding insect prey to take back to their nest to feed their larvae.
Researchers at University College London are trying to improve the image of wasps to prevent them from dying out.
These are our natural pest controllers. So they are doing the job that we use chemicals, pesticides to do.
British scientists say rather than calling in the exterminators, people should learn to live with wasp nests and welcome the insects by planting wasp-friendly gardens with shelter and long grass. Tina Kraus, CBS News, London.
More women are turning to placenta pills after giving birth.
Jennifer Mayer is a doula and placenta specialist. She's been creating pills made from the placenta for 8 years. She made them after the birth of her first baby and plans to do it with her second.
The days that I forgot to take it, I was just way more tired. The afternoons seemed much longer. And the days that I did take it, it felt like the days just went smoother.
Mayer says clients report having more energy, fewer mood swings, and better breast milk production.
After having a baby, it can be a really challenging time. Your reserves are depleted, so anything that can help replenish and restore.
The process to encapsulate the placenta is not FDA regulated. Specialists say they clean the placenta and prepare it for dehydration.
It takes a placenta specialist 2 to 4 days to create the pills. Each mom gets a bottle like this with 80 to 120 pills inside, and the recommended dose, 1 to 2 pills a few times a day.
We know that there are some potential harms, and the research really doesn't demonstrate any benefits.
Dr. Barbara Levy with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says she has safety concerns about eating the placenta because its job is to filter out poisons and bacteria.
There was a scenario where a woman did the encapsulation. It had bacteria. She did not get sick, but the bacteria got through her breast milk to her baby, and her baby got very, very sick.
Dr. Levy recommends new moms talk with their doctors before making decisions about placenta pills. Hillary Lane, CBS News, Brooklyn, New York.
A new warning about sleeping with contacts in.
I'm Gary Nunn. Because about one-third of us go to bed or nap in our contacts,
it's recommended to never sleep in your contact lenses.
Ophthalmologist Christopher Starr says shut-eye promotes bacteria growth.
When you're blinking during the day, you're cleaning your contact lenses throughout the day, and when you sleep and you're not blinking, those bacteria can just grow and infect the cornea.
Sleeping with contacts in sharply raises the chances of eye infection by 6 to 8 times. Experts say even lenses made to be worn overnight have a high degree of risk. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
A new estimate of how many cell phone calls you'll soon be getting from scammers.
New phone Who Dis, a company that provides caller ID and blocking tech to phone carriers, says by next year it'll be a 50-50 shot. It's a scammer on the other end. First Orion's Gavin McComber.
Our data scientist team is projecting that it's going to reach nearly 50% by early 2019.
So how do you get rid of the pesky scammers?
If you see a call that looks like your own number or something similar, ignore it. Or you can file a complaint with the FCC.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
Coming up, the sex lives of Bert and Ernie.
Do you like me, Bert?
Do I like you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course I like you, Ernie.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy.
Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do.
Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A year ago, Hurricane Maria thrashed Puerto Rico, knocking out power grids for months, killing thousands of people and forcing many others out of their homes. Correspondent David Begno has been following the aftermath of that storm and its influence on Puerto Rico since then. He joins us in New York. David, this weekend, you're chronicling the impact of Maria. In a CBSN special, Puerto Rico, the exodus after Hurricane Maria, what does the island even look like now?
Steve, it's better than it has been. In fact, I went with a colleague of mine and he said, oh, it doesn't even look this bad. Now, granted, he hadn't been as many times as we have. But the bottom line is the word you use, thrash, I keep finding a different word to describe how bad Maria was. And thrashed is another great word. This Sunday's documentary will deal with the Exodus. It really is one of the stories we haven't told. Yes, we've talked about the people who left the island and went to either Florida or New York, but we had a minute and 20 seconds. We have a half hour, and actually a full hour in total, to talk about the Exodus that has happened. Now listen, Puerto Rico has been in bad shape for many years, before Maria. But Maria sort of sealed the deal. Maria was the straw that broke the camel's back, as the cliche goes. And so this documentary is about the Exodus, the people who said, I can no longer wait for it to get better. I got to go because I think my opportunity is better on the mainland.
And how much has that affected the culture of Puerto Rico? And then how has that affected the communities of Puerto Ricans in places like New York and Florida?
Listen, I think it has only bolstered the presence that Puerto Ricans have in places like Orlando or, let's say, New York City or even in the Massachusetts area. But it has left people on the island missing their brethren. Let me tell you something. You meet a Puerto Rican and they are some proud people. They remind me of what it's like to be Cajun. We are so happy down in South Louisiana to be Cajun, and we will wave that flag. Well, so too do the Puerto Ricans. So you'll see a moment in the documentary where one woman, a single mother, is taking her daughter to the mainland. And the moment when she tells her own mother goodbye, I was watching the edit and I got emotional. I started to tear up. Maybe it's because I've been there so much. Maybe it's because, you know, professionally and quite frankly, Steve, personally, I've become so invested in this story.
How much of this special is about accountability, though? As I've seen from your Instagram photos, your emails about you talking with federal officials and the governor of Puerto Rico and the mayor of San Juan.
Not a lot at all. And you raise a good question, and I want to say this. Not everything can be included in this documentary. There will be some aspects of accountability. Specifically, you will see an interview I do with an official from FEMA regarding what may be millions of bottles of water that were left sitting on a runway in Puerto Rico. Why the heck did they let that happen? Well, you're going to get a substantive interview, 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes in length. But in areas of the documentary, there isn't the accountability aspect because so much of our reporting has involved the human aspect.
You know, David, I met a Puerto Rican woman living here in D.C. She had recently moved here from the island, and she mentioned how important you are to Puerto Rico since you've been covering the story. She mentioned how her family or her friends have that kind of candle you often see in churches of saints on the outside of it, and it was your image, she says. What's that like to be so at the center of lives in Puerto Rico?
Humbling. In fact, I'll tell you the first moment where I saw one of the pictures. There was a woman apparently who had taken, made stickers of my face with sort of this saintly halo around it, and was putting it on candles, and a couple of my colleagues actually used it to poke fun. And I remember laughing initially. And then I thought, these people are not trying to get a laugh. And that's when I settled in and I started to read what they meant by it. And I realized what we were able to do was be a lifeline on the island that for people was invaluable. And so it doesn't go to your head or your ego, Steve. It goes to your feet. And what it's done is it's grounded me in a way that no other story in my career has before. And what I feel coming out of Puerto Rico is a sense of responsibility to not let those viewers down. So when I meet people like that, whether it's in the airport, the coffee shop, or the doctor's office, quite frankly, when they walk up to me, they don't want an autograph. They want a hug. They want a hug to say thank you and to say, please don't let people forget what's happening on our island.
Correspondent David Begno on his good work on Puerto Rico in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria and his CBSN special, Puerto Rico, the Exodus After Hurricane Maria, airing Sunday night and available online. Thanks again, David.
Thank you, my friend.
Finally this weekend, Sesame Street is responding to claims of a puppet love story. Here's correspondent Tony DeCopel.
Do you like me, Bert?
Do I like you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course I like you, Ernie. You're my best friend.
For nearly 50 years.
Ooh. I'm home, Bert.
Bert and Ernie have been the symbol of friendship for young audiences around the world.
I like you.
But a former writer for the show now says the two were more than just pals. In an interview with the LGBTQ website Queerty, Mark Saltzman, who wrote for Sesame Street for more than 13 years, starting in 1984, said Bert and Ernie mirrored the relationship he had with his partner Arnie. I don't think I'd know how else to write them, but as a loving couple, he said, that's what I had in my life, a Bert and Ernie relationship. How could it not permeate?
I missed my old buddy Bert.
Those comments have reignited a debate that has lasted for years, one that came to a head in 2013. A photo on the cover of The New Yorker showed the two watching the Supreme Court's landmark decision that declared a federal ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. But in a statement, Sesame Workshop refuted Saltzman's claim, writing, Bert and Ernie were created to be best friends. Bert's creator, Frank Oz, agreed on Twitter. Does it really matter? There's much more to a human being than just straightness or gayness. Sesame Street has long been at the forefront of diversity in television.
The other children at school don't want to play with me because I'm HIV positive.
Featuring a character living with HIV named Kami in 2002.
I know that Fluffster helps you feel calm, too.
And just last year, introducing Julia, who has autism.
They belong to the people who create them, but they also belong to everyone else, right?
Elahe Izadi writes for The Washington Post. She says people's interpretation of these characters might go against the creator's intent.
People are longing to see a more accurate representation of the world in which they live.
Come on!
So I think it's just touching a nerve for a lot of people who are thinking more deeply about the notion of representation and how people even talk about sexual orientation.
According to a book about the history of Sesame Street, the relationship between the two could actually have another tie. It might possibly mirror the friendship between Bert creator Frank Oz and Muppets creator Jim Henson. They performed the characters for many years. Tony DeCoppel, CBS News, New York.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.